You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Grey Malkin Lane podcast, where queer friends and allies gather to review and discuss the original X-Men comics in continuity order. We are rounding up 2024 with some final stories set in the Silver Age-ish before we get to giant size X-Men in the new year. I am so happy to have 3 guests join me today. 3 people I followed online for a long time. One I've met in person, one I've hung out on the show with like 3 times. It's lovely to have you all here. Let me have you each introduce yourselves. Give me your name and pronouns. Tell everybody a little of your origin story. Let's begin with the incredible Wolver Steve. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks. Are you good?
I'm good.
Good, good. Well, I'm over here all the way in sunny England. I am me, him. I'm just me. I'm obsessed with Wolverine, and I have been for most of my life, since a 10-year-old boy to now. Just turned 45, so 35 years a Wolverine fan. You guys on the podcast can't see, but obviously you 3 that I'm chatting with, I'm sat in my Wolver room as we speak.
Your Wolver room.
My room. It's bloody freezing in here, actually, hence the hoodie. But yeah, that's me. I love Wolverine, love everything about it. It's all a bang on about forever and a day. I have no intention on changing.
I follow you online. I would think of you as like the biggest Wolverine fan in my brain that exists. Like if I had to choose number one, it's like you and then Hugh Jackman.
Well, Hugh Jackman only said just the other month, he said, I don't know who's a bigger Wolverine fan, you or me. Thanks for your support for our movie, for Deadpool and Wolverine. So that meant quite a lot to me as well. That was on.
Yeah, you've met Hugh a couple times. Times, right? A
couple of times now, yeah, love it.
Great. That's fantastic. Steve, what is it that's your favorite thing about Wolverine?
My favorite thing about Wolverine is the fact that he is, in my mind, unbeatable.
Excellent.
You know, when I first saw him as a 10-year-old boy, the thing that led me to him was the fact he wore yellow. That was my favorite color as a kid. Nobody had really heard of the X-Men back then, and in England, that is, and certainly where I lived, it was just very, very quiet, that, you know, the whole X-Men thing. And I just loved how he looked. I loved he was unbeatable. He was a badass. He didn't really care who he fought against, of course, as we all know from where we're heading with this podcast. And he's just brilliant. He's just awesome. I love everything about him. Love how he looks. Love how he is. Love how he does care deep down, but he tries to not show that a lot of the time.
I'm so happy to welcome my friend Ken Crisp back to the show as well. Hi, Kenny.
My name is Ken. Him. I'm sorry if I'm a little echoey today. I'm in our dining room because there are people taking other meetings all over this town. Big X-Men fan. I've always been obsessed with comic books, comic book heroes, specifically the Merry Mutants. I sort of just consume X-Men content every day.
And Ken, what is it that you love about Wolverine?
Oh, the hairy chest, for sure. Honestly, my favorite thing about Wolverine is probably his sidekicks, because he is like the ultimate trainer of bad bitches. And so I being a large homosexual man, I love a bad bitch. So it's seeing where they come from is really, really fun and exciting. But also the hairy chest.
Also, welcome to the incredible Colby Melvin. Colby, I got to meet in Minneapolis at the Uncanny Experience recently, where he was a guest on my fashion panel. We had such a good time. Colby, welcome to Grey Malkin Lane.
So good to see you again. That fashion panel was so much fun. I had no idea what I was getting into. And I mean, I had so many people come up to me after just saying how much fun they had in there. So snaps to you.
I'm so glad. It's like the most fun you have at a con. I think it's a delight. Tell everybody a little about yourself.
I have recently been into the comics, but growing up, the movies and everything always caught my interest. But in my adult life, my partner is a huge X-Men fan and had this massive collection of comics and has basically, since the beginning of our relationship, been like deprogramming my brain from everything I've seen in the movies to like what is correct in the comics. So I am catching up, but I absolutely love it. And for me, the costumes are really what has drawn me to the X-Men, whether it's in the movies, the comics, the animated series, all of it.
Excellent, excellent. And what do you love about Wolverine?
I like that, while yes, Wolverine has his sidekicks, ultimately Wolverine is independent in the fact that, you know, he's not going to go with the crowd. He's very much going to just carry on. He can be by himself. He can be independent. He's lived long enough to be comfortable being alone, but also completely fine if he's got that sidekick.
Absolutely. He's an interesting character to play off. We're going to have a lot of conversations about Wolverine today, so it's going to be a good time. I opened this month with an episode covering his very first appearance with Paul Jenkins and Erica Schultz, who are Wolverine Origins and Wolverine Laura Kinney writers. And we got to really celebrate what it is about this character that makes him special. I've never been a big Wolverine fan. I've never disliked him, but I was buying comics in the 90s where like Wolverine was in like 9 books a month, along with like Ghost Rider and Spider-Man and Deadpool.
Still is.
And I just was like naturally averse to all of those. Like, I'm like, I don't want to buy every Wolverine book. The origin story for this character at that point was very like, his background was still mysterious, but writers just kept adding more and more to it. So here's a World War II story, and here is a samurai story, and now look over here, he was fighting in this war, and then he's over, like, it just was kind of exhausting. I ended up writing on the handbooks a few years later, and I remember just that like task of trying to stack it all up. And then they did the big origin dump after House of M, right? Like the Wolverine origin series. We had Jim Zub writing that Life of Wolverine comic recently, where it just kind of tries to string it all together, and it's a lot to keep track of. I didn't introduce myself. Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I use he, him pronouns. You guys know me as the host of this show, obviously. We're just going to kind of jump in with some Wolverine stuff. So I'd love for everybody, if you can recall, what was your first exposure to this character and how did you feel? So Steve, you started this a little, like when you were 10, you saw him as kind of unbeatable. But what is it that stood out to you about this guy?
10-year-old boy walked up to a little local newsagent over here, and all the English comics, if you like, were bigger, bolder. The artwork wasn't as good. And I saw this guy fighting these look like hyenas kind of things. It's Wolverine number 73. The first comic I saw, been out quite a while, and it was just left on a spinner rack. And I thought, God, that looks brilliant. So I picked it up and looked at him, and I read it, and Jubilee features in that one, I seem to recall, much like the guys were saying. So the psychic element was there as well. And you could tell he's this caring, ultimate father figure, of course, for her and many others, as we all know since. I don't know, as that impressionable kid, I just related to, I liked how he was, and I thought, that's a good role model to a degree. To build confidence in, you know, for a very shy kid that I was for many, many years. And ultimately, that's something I have followed the older I've got. Because I was a shy, intimidated child, well into my late teens. And I'd suddenly thought one day, I'm going to be a bit more like Wolverine, just think, fuck it. I want to do that. I'm going to do that. And it's that kind of attitude I really related to through numerous writers. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, the way he looks just bloody brilliant.
There's something about him that gives that like little guy syndrome, almost like in a Spider-Man way, right? Like Spider-Man's the nerd that can stand up to the bullies. Wolverine's 5'3" canonically. And when you look at him fighting these massive monsters right from his very first appearance, it's very, very impressive. Kenny, what about you?
The animated series, probably. I remember in the intro song when his claws would come out and he'd like, rah! And it looked like there was like electricity coming out of them. So I thought that was part of it for a little while before I wised up. But apart from that, I think the earliest memory I have of Wolverine is, I don't know what issue, but it was definitely a fastball special.
Brilliant.
Do you want to tell for our listeners who may be less familiar what a fastball special is?
So a fastball special was originally was Wolverine and Colossus, because Colossus is this big hulking brute and Wolverine is this little ball of muscle and claws. And so Colossus would pick him up and just chuck him at whatever bad guy they were facing. It was called the fastball special.
There's a thing we talk about often in modern comics, which is the mutant circuit. The idea of using two powers in conjunction with each other. And the fastball special is kind of the big classic example of that. Big guy throws the small guy. We got the little scrapper and the big ox, right? The gentle painter who gets hard for a living. The little scrapper who pops his claws. Colby, what was your first exposure to this character?
I think it was probably also the animated series, but I think it was like a Pizza Hut VHS of Night of the Sentinels, something like that. It was like an initial episode. And I remember that it was my first exposure to him, because this stuck with me for a while, was what the hell is on his face in trying to understand what was going going on there?
He has like little whiskers on his mask sometimes, and then those like big black. It's almost like it's trying to make him look like a badger. We talked a little about the name Wolverine in my last episode, so we won't explore it here, but the little scrappy guy where I got to joke with Paul and Erica that the best thing Wolverines are actually known for are like expressing their anal glands, and I'm like, oh, that's not a superpower I necessarily need to see here.
You might see that version in The Boys at some point, no doubt.
Do you have a single favorite Wolverine story? You've probably read them all, I imagine.
I've read plenty, if not all, certainly over the years. I've still got some 1,400 plus comics that I've again added into my collection over the years. My favorite, I always say, is Wolverine 145, Volume 2. You can see that cover of it there. It's a Lionel Yu super duper cover where he first gets his adamantium back after fighting Sabretooth for it. Apocalypse puts them against each other, if you recall, and they fight in that, and Apocalypse eventually makes Wolverine his agent of death of the Horseman. That's the one that's just stuck with me vividly for years because the artwork is just phenomenal. I love the story in it. The X-Men have got a Skrull in the background of the story pretending to be Wolverine as well. So there's double Logans there, and I just love it. If you haven't read it for a long time, guys, thoroughly recommend just looking back at that because it's gorgeous in every way, writing and visually.
Yeah, though that's really good. I remember reading in the 90s when they first announced the first X-Men movie coming out, like all the fan casting, and they were like, they're going to cast a wrestler, they're going to do this, and then it was Hugh Jackman, right? It's fascinating to me to see how Wolverine is portrayed. I think for most of us, particularly of a certain age, I think we're all in the same age bracket, at least. There's the idea of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and or Wolverine from the animated series. We hear the gruff voice and we see the spiked hair, you know, but there's a lot of different versions of this character. He's sometimes drawn as the small scrappy guy, like back in the original books. And then sometimes he looks like he's like 6'6" and like a huge wrestler. People have gotten really into drawing like sexy Wolverine lately, like Wolverine's ass on display. He's always shirtless and like ripping things off. Like this is a huge piece of the character, I think, in the last 20 years in particular, but there's a lot of different styles of him. Do you guys have any signature Wolverine artists that stand out as some of your favorite?
Lionel Francis Yu, and I love his artwork. He's my favorite. It's the dark lines, the shading, the way it highlights how Wolverine looks, mask or otherwise. I just love it. But of course, Adam Kubert is right up there with me as well. I often tweet and Instagram with him, and I always call him King Kubert, much like his dad, much like his brother. They are absolutely brilliant. They were born into that job, and you know, it's a legacy they've set forever. It's some of the very best artwork, in my opinion, you can ever see of Wolverine.
Jim Lee, his Wolverine is so ingrained in my brain that I, like, whenever I'm filing through Wolverine appearances, I always start with that specific look. And of course, that's, you know, what translated to the animated series as well.
You know, the Romitas really stand out, obviously. Mark Silvestri draws a great Wolverine. There's a lot of iconic Wolverine imagery, right? Everything from Wolverine on the motorcycle, Wolverine pinning people between his two claws with the third one ready to go, Wolverine in any sort of like wolf pack running through the woods, right? Wolverine in his like Weapon X gear, like escaping, wearing only a diaper and a mask and a harness. There's all these different versions of him that I think we associate as iconic. And I think that's one of the interesting things is Wolverine and Daredevil to a different degree are kind of Marvel's Batman character in a certain way, in that you can put them in a lot of different types of stories and have it make a lot of sense. Wolverine begins as a government agent, and it seems to be very much a commentary on kind of the post-Vietnam world where soldiers were coming back with PTSD. He's a character who can't remember his history or what happened to him. There's a lot of Rambo energy in his early appearances, but they also make him from Canada, which is crazy when you consider what was being done in books at the time. His original appearance is a ton of fun, and in his first appearance where he's fighting the Hulk and the Flesh Eater, again, he's the little scrappy guy with the claws, and the claws that pop out of his hands instead of being on his fingertips, the implied violence, and the Punisher showing up right around the same time, right? Like, there's a lot of interesting ideas about him as the anti-hero. Wolverine fits in a lot of different types of stories, and he's not your typical hero for that reason. This guy kills, this guy's a soldier, and he stands out on the X-Men and on any other team for a lot of different reasons. What are your thoughts on Wolverine as this like government agent, this archetype of the American hero back from combat?
I love it. I think it's great. As very much a sign of the times, exactly as you pointed out there. The Rambo vibe was huge, even with some of the imagery, never mind the way it sort of almost mirrored some of the storylines to a degree. Yeah, I love it. I love the secret agent element. It's very, to me as an Englishman, it's very James Bond espionage. You know, it's one man can stop a country kind of thing. And I like that vibe about him. The whole ninja thing that kind of formed off the back of that. The samurai, if you like, as well. It all worked really well, I think, as this kind of character to build him. Massive great depth in every sense, being this hero, exactly as you said again about Batman, that you can throw into a whole different world on his own and he can stand his ground against any and every organization, effectively, as a one-man army. I love it.
I'm married to a Canadian and I...
Did you say comedian or Canadian?
Canadian. Oh, God.
Canadian comedian.
But it is so funny, like, knowing so many Canadians and being so engrossed in their culture now, the idea that the most evil, purly people in all of Marvel Comics is the Canadian government is absolutely hilarious to me.
He's Canadian, but fighting for the U.S. Army?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
They, like, loan him out, right? All of this is fleshed out much later. Wolverine, in his post-soldier years, where he did serve with the Canadian government in various wars, he has a bunch of different adventures, but eventually he gets acquired by the Weapon X project. And when you stack up all the continuity, there's some weird stuff like First X-Men, where Wolverine and Sabretooth lead a team of mutants together against some Sentinels. That happens before Weapon X. Like, there's a lot of crazy continents that you have to, like, mix in. But Wolverine, at a certain point, gets acquired by the Weapon X facility, which is a corrupt government. Think of it like Hydra, except for evil scientists. It's more like AIM, I suppose, where they're creating super soldiers. It's a tradition that's been around for many years, and there's a lot of mythology added. But eventually, they mess him up so much, they put the metal on his skeleton, they scramble his brain, he has a lot of implants, he doesn't know what's true or what's not. And during this time, again, more continuity, Professor X soon recruits him from Department H, which is connected to Weapon X, and they've loaned him out to the American government for this assignment for a particular reason. Xavier then jumps in and, like, futzes with his memories and then makes him join the X-Men. And there's various versions of that story, too. I don't know if that helps at all.
I mean, he had to be so bored. I mean, he's living for this long and he still cares about, you know, not even his own country's war on a different continent. But, you know, I guess that's what happens when, you know, you're kind of stuck living in same little hot, sexy Wolverine body. I would be spending my time differently, just saying.
His hair is iconic, obviously. Steve, what's it like to craft the perfect Wolverine hairdo in cosplay?
Well, as a bald man, it's very difficult, but but I've done it. I've got some very good friends out there, very skilled friends, and they've crafted this amazing wig for me. Shout out to Lisa Jane Cosplay for doing that at the time, and absolutely brilliant. I love it. And it's real hair, it's real, you know, wig in that sense, and it looks fantastic on me. And when I put it on, I feel different. I've got my wicked sideburns, you know, I feel like Wolverine as soon as I put that on. The hair is iconic, as you say. If you're cosplaying Wolverine, you have to do, in my opinion, a version of that at some point in your life. As much as I love masked up Wolverine, that has to be done. But I've done many. I think I've done about 10 different versions. The first time I cosplayed as Wolverine, the word cosplay didn't even exist, to my knowledge. It was called fancy dress back then over here in sunny England. That was when I was about 14. So I've done it. I've been Wolverine longer than Hugh Jackman, put it that way.
There's a lot of great Wolverine cosplay out there. And then again, the iconic, like, claws that you extend from your hand that people buy, right? I'm going to ask some random Wolverine questions of each of you. Colby, if we're focusing on Wolverine's love life, do you prefer him with Jean Grey, Storm, or Heather Hudson? And why?
Why does it got to be a woman?
In this case, those are your three options. There is a reality out there where Wolverine's in a relationship with Hercules, which I love.
Oh, that's my reality.
So Jean Grey, Storm, or Heather Hudson for you?
Storm, just because I feel like their energies can match. Jean's just a lot for me. You have a goddess of Storm and this man that's going to live forever. It's, yeah.
They feel like...
They seem to get along well enough.
Yeah, they feel like the perfect friends with benefits for me. Like, they're right, coworkers. Exactly. When a need needs to be met, I think it works for them. Wolverine's got the people he fucks and then the people he dates, right? Just like a lot of people do. Steve, do you prefer Wolverine with Tiger, Melita Garner, or Silver Fox?
Oh, Silver Fox, all day long. All day long. Brilliant character. Loved the story arc, obviously, that started off early days in Wolverine's existence. I loved, even though X-Men Origins Wolverine, the movie, let's say, isn't the best film, but I like it a lot. I love the elements they had in there where she was manipulated and tricked him, and I don't know, I just like her. She's a stunning looking character in the movies, in the cartoon, of course, in the X-Men, the animated series, with the Weapon X Lies and Videotape episode, and in the the comics itself, I just like her. And again, later on, they've changed her over the years. But the original one, you know, the peaceful woman, he was happy with her. Just him and her in the middle of nowhere, in the wilderness. I liked that vibe. I felt for him when she was taken away from him.
But then later she becomes like a Weapon X agent too, maybe. But maybe, yeah, it's a tricky story. Larry Hubbard,
you know it. Stuff, you guys. Know it. Yeah, they mess around with it even more later on, just because they can.
Kenny, do you prefer Wolverine with Maruga Yashida, Yukio, or Elektra?
Oh, Yukio is such a lesbian. I've seen Mariko. He was really happy and settled with Mariko, and but Yukio is too much woman for him.
I agree, but I think Yukio is very pansexual. I think she just follows whatever opportunity gives her the biggest adrenaline rush, and that's what makes her amazing.
I have both Yukio and Mariko tattooed on me, as well as 22 Wolverine tattoos.
Oh my god.
Shut up. That is amazing.
Yeah. I'm slightly dedicated, let's say.
Do you prefer Yukio or Mariko with Wolverine?
Me? Mariko, definitely. I agree that Yukio does what she wants, goes her own way, goes with anyone, I would imagine. But I absolutely love Yukio as a character as well. Again, it's that psychic vibe, but comparing her to the likes of Kitty and Jubilee, where they're little girls almost, Yukio's a woman. Yukio's a badass. She doesn't need to be protected by Wolverine. She can give as good as she gets. Whereas the girls need a little bit of daddying by Logan, of course, over the years.
When we think of Wolverine variants, do you have one that stands out as iconic to you? Old Man Logan was not only a huge thing, he's the grizzled old, like, Armageddon version of Wolverine, you know, like a Walking Dead style end of days, who ends up coming to our universe and is on the teams for an extended period of time while regular Wolverine's dead. Or we got Age of Apocalypse Wolverine with the crazy hair and the one hand, who I think becomes a Phoenix Force template at some point. There's a few different things. Do you guys have a favorite that stands out to you?
That one for me, it's the Weapon X Age of Apocalypse. Didn't even get his Wolverine moniker, in that universe. And I was so absolutely, and I mean completely unexpected and blown away that we saw Hugh Jackman as that version in Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes. I
did not expect that. But that it's such a visually stunning look to see this indestructible character with suddenly when one hand missing. I thought, what the actual fuck has happened here when I first read that? And then, of course, I'm sure you guys have all read it back then, but when he pops those claws out of his stump in the comic, the image in that comic, wow. That for me has stuck with me all these years from then to now. So to see it on screen, I never ever thought we'd see a movie version of that. So, you know, kudos to the main man Hugh for bringing that to life, because it's just iconic. And they changed him so much for that particular variant. That's why it sticks in my mind so much.
First one to say, when I saw that on screen, I literally squealed. I was in the theater with my husband and he like smacked me. He was like, shut up. Honestly, my choice was also going to be the Age of Apocalypse Logan. Now that I'm thinking about it, definitely Hercules lover Logan instead, because Hercules.
You've got a big grin on your face for people that can't see right now.
Luckily, we can only see you white stuff as well.
Definitely, the first time I read that Extreme X-Men run, it was Extreme X-Men, right?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. I just like he gave off like bisexual vibes for so many years. I mean, like to see it like an alternate reality, him with a man, but not with any man, like with the manliest man. It was just the best. I was so excited.
Before Al Ewing was able to reveal that Hercules was bisexual, we had a gay Hercules in another reality. We have a lot of Wolverine variants, even in our world, right, as reference. There's Wolverine the spy, Wolverine the ninja, Wolverine the teacher, Wolverine the dad, right? There's a lot of these different versions of him. I really like when they give us a Wolverine variant, like a Venom Wolverine or a Gamma Wolverine or Ghost Rider Wolverine, the Hellverine book that's going around now. We've had Wolverine Noir and Wolverine as Nova. There's like a bajillion examples of this. In fact, there was even that recent Weapon X book by Christos Gage, which is a team up of alternate Wolverines, including a zombie Wolverine as part of the team running around, hopping from reality to reality. It's a pretty fun time. Today is what if Wolverine became anti-hero of the X-Men? We'll be talking about it. It's a complicated story in a way. Next week is Wolverine as Nick Fury. The week after, we're doing what if Donald Duck became Wolverine, which is a recent book that they put out. So there's every variation of this character. We also get to see Wolverine reflected in other characters. And I'd love to hear your quick opinions on Wolverine variants that exist as go-tos in the Marvel Universe. universe. Colby, do you have any strong opinions on Laura Kinney?
Love her. It's like we said, strong female, like just badass, independent, but like not trying too hard, just naturally a badass.
She's a parallel of Wolverine in weird ways. Like we meet him when he doesn't know his memories, but she is raised from childhood to be an assassin with literally no emotions, relationships, right? That idea of like discovering the grizzled PTSD soldier, like figuring out who they are right from the beginning. Kenny, do you have any thoughts on a Gabby Kinney or Scout?
Honey Badger.
Honey Badger.
I love her. She's so precious. And she just wants everyone to be happy, and she just wants her family. I absolutely love Gabby.
Steve, how about Wolverine as reflected in Dawkins?
Oh, great. Yeah, the visual look again. Stunning looking variant. And finally mixed him up. The claws, they are unique, aren't they? The one out the wrist and the two out the hand. But bizarre idea. God knows how that would actually be useful in a lot of ways. But it looks bloody brilliant. Again, I'm not quite sure how his tattoo stayed on with all those healing powers. But good on him. He's kept the look well.
That was addressed somewhere. Like, he had his skin permanently altered or something. So even when he's resurrected, he still has the tattoos. Or, like, he gets the tattoos again. That was literally addressed in a story, but I can't remember what the explanation was.
No, I can't. I've read it like you, but I can't quite remember. Of course,
it's a henna tattoo.
That's fair. It's just temporary. He paints it on every morning. There's also some really odd ones. I got to do a recent Patreon on the character Albert and LCD, and that reflection of like the Wolverine Jubilee relationship. These people kind of programmed to be a particular way and then see who they are, right? And then we look at Wolverine with his foes, and this is a quick conversation, but do you have a single favorite arch nemesis for Wolverine?
Sabretooth for me.
What is it that you love about that Wolverine Sabretooth dynamic?
It's almost the same as we've hinted at a few times. It's the little man against the big man. Sabretooth thinks he's better, but we all know he isn't. He is physically bigger, stronger, more vicious even, let's say, until our man Logan obviously kicks into his berserker rage and just flips his shit anyway. But I like that dynamic. I like the little man, the underdog, who always ends up coming on top one way or another. I like how brutal Sabretooth is with his annual reminders and his taunts and the way he tortures Logan all the time. As a villain that keeps on coming back and never ever relenting, it's appealing. And Ken, you can make a bloody brilliant Sabretooth.
Oh, I love Sabretooth. I know it's problematic because he's horrible, but I imprinted so hard on Sabretooth as a child. It's really problematic.
I love that he's like, you'll be a brilliant Sabretooth, and your initial response is, "Arr." It is interesting in that they have kind of the same power set, but Sabretooth's a little bigger and a little crueler. However, I just did a Patreon episode on Matsuo Tsurayama. There's that thing where Sabretooth visits Wolverine every year on his birthday to like kill someone, but Wolverine visits Matsuo every year to like cut off a piece of him. And you're like, are these guys that different?
There's a lot of similarities. Yeah.
Ken, do you have a favorite Wolverine enemy?
Oh, it's gotta be Lady Deathstrike.
Oh, great.
Deathstrike, she's so good. I'm also a big Spiral fan. And so like having her like Spiral like tinkering off her little backstory just makes me really happy. My first exposure to her was also the animated series. And so they sort of, I guess they conflated Deathstrike and Yuriko for the animated series. And so I didn't really understand why she was like so mad at Wolverine. She just seemed like a mean girl with nails, which
I can't wait to do a Lady Deathstrike trial one day. We're not to her just yet, but her sense of honor, her connection to her family, and then the cyborg of it all, right? Like, she's got a lot of complexities to her character. Colby, do you have a favorite Wolverine foe? And why is it Cyclops?
I love that Wolverine just sort of eye roll about how virtuous Scott is, just because he hasn't lived long enough to like the glimmer in his eye fade out and like understand humanity enough. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
the glimmer in his eye. Yep. Cyclops. Yep.
There's about 100 relationships. Like, we could talk about Wolverine and Rogue, Wolverine and Professor X, Wolverine and Captain America. There's so many interesting characters to play him off of. He's a really complex character in that way. And that's one of the reasons I think people latch on, is because you can tell, again, a lot of different types of stories. We're going to wrap up our Wolverine conversation with, I'm going to ask you each one of these. I think the three greatest loves in Wolverine's life are the following three things. And I want you to tell me what it is he loves about this particular thing. Colby, what does Wolverine love about a stale beer?
It has been around for a really long time, like him, but he's still drinkable.
Maybe there's some hair in it.
yeah, you know, but at the end of the day, it's got trauma, but it's still drinkable.
Kenny, what does Wolverine love about a pack of wolves?
He loves the idea of the alpha being the leader of the pack, but also the one that protects. They're not huge aggressor that people might think they are. They are the protector of the pack. And I think that even though he's very much like lone wolf energy, whenever he has his pack, he falls super hard into that role of I'm going to protect these people.
Lastly, Steve, what does Wolverine love about a motorcycle?
The raw power, the noise, the escapism, the freedom it offers him.
The crotch rocket that. Energy.
the raw power between his legs.
That's also how he gets his hair like that.
That makes sense. You get a little wet and then he has a healing factor. So it just, no matter how he styles it, it just goes back that way. Like it just heals him back to normal. There's a lot of interesting stories with Wolverine in the 70s. And we're going to read a book from 1982 in a minute. You can't really show the bloodshed. You can imply it. And even in Wolverine's first appearance, he's like impaling monsters, but you can't quite see it. They have to be careful with their angles. He gets more and more violent as time goes by. We've now seen Wolverine beheaded and dissolved in acid and, you know, crucified and buried alive. Just every horrible thing you can imagine. Again, in the Matsuo story, Wolverine like put himself in a coffin and had it buried because he knew Matsuo was going to dig it up. So when the coffin opens, Wolverine pops out of it. Like, what the hell? Like, this man loves a plan. But it gets more and more gory with him over time. You can't just hack robots like we do in some of these stories because it gets really bloody later. Colby, go ahead.
What happens if somebody throws Wolverine into an active volcano? He can't die, but how's he going to get out?
One of the only effective ways to kill Wolverine is to drown him, right? But there's kind of these ideas. They've explored the limits of his healing factor, which seem to kind of move back and forth throughout the stories. There's been some stories where like there's an entity in hell that helps resurrect him every time he dies, and Wolverine has to fight that guy at one point. There's times when he can take hours and hours to heal from a bullet wound, and there's times when he's like melted in half but still pops back up like Deadpool style. Steve, do you have comments on the limits or boundaries of Wolverine's healing factor?
Yeah, I said right at the start, didn't I? The fact I really liked him initially because he was unbeatable in every possible sense. I like how he can survive all that personally. Yeah, it's far-fetched, but who likes reality, eh? Things like that. He's not quite Marvel Superman, but I love the fact he can get beaten the absolute living shit out of. He can lose bits of him. Like you say, torn in half even once in the Ultimate Universe, and he still gets back up to fight again. I'm happy with the way he continually can just bite off these problems, these issues, whatever anyone throws at him. Even Magneto, of course, ripping the adamantium out of him. He still came back after that. I love it. I'm happy with that. Let's keep him that way. When he got shot in X2, the movie, a little bullet in the head and it knocked him out cold. I thought, meh, get the fuck out. That is not Wolverine.
We've had stories where he loses his healing factor and he has to adamantium poison he kicks in. Deadpool is the far version of this, right? Deadpool's the I can grow back from anything. I almost don't like it when they take Wolverine's powers that far. I almost prefer it when like he takes a little while to knit up and heal, you know?
Yeah. Agreed. I completely agree. Like, I agree that Deadpool is the extreme, the healing. His healing powers are probably better than Wolverine's in that sense. So in a bizarre way, sort of loosely conflicted what I just said, I guess it keeps Wolverine slightly more grounded with his healing, that it takes him a while to, you know, pull himself back together in every possible way, rather than Deadpool being a few days. I like it. Deadpool is the extreme. Wolverine probably wouldn't survive having his head cut off.
So Wolverine is created in the mid-70s. He's then immediately brought into the X-Men, where Chris Claremont is the primary contributor. Everything that was introduced about this character makes him special and then makes him a pretty big deal over time. Wolverine is the first kind of branch out big book out of the X-Men, along with New Mutants eventually. He gets a 4-issue limited series, and then he gets a long run. Initially written by Claremont, Larry Hama is kind of the primary writer, and then he's basically had a comic book ever since for the last, you know, 40-ish years. He's a really popular character. The book we're about to review is from 1982, which is right before Wolverine gets his first limited series, right? The What If book is playing off of how are we going to sell more books, and the title of this story is What If Wolverine Had Killed the Hulk?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like, last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Which, you know, if you're 1982, I was 4 years old at the time, you're going, ooh, interesting, right? Like, this is that era of, like, Punisher violence is like heroism. We're starting to change the rules about what things look like. So this is a different time in comics. This book comes out in February 1982, and I've explained this on the show before, but alternate realities from Marvel, unless they're specifically named in story, they're listed by year, then month, and then the number of realities that are created in a particular time. So this reality is Earth 820231. There is only one appearance of this particular reality. So we've never seen this version of Wolverine in another comic book. The writer on this book is Rick Margopoulos, with Bob Budiansky on pencils, Mike Esposito on inks, Bob Sharon on colors, Karen Nemri on letters, and Tom DeFalco is the editor. There's a backup story in this book called What If There Was No Fantastic Four that we're not going to talk about today, although it is a cute story. So we're primarily just focusing on this open story, and it directly is a parallel of that original story that we just reviewed, where Wolverine fights the Hulk as an agent of Department H or Weapon X. When we look at this cover, Wolverine gets kind of a first logo here in a way, and it kind of looks like a spooky, like, what if Wolverine had killed the Hulk? Like, that's kind of how the letters look to me. Do you guys have thoughts on Wolverine's kind of savage bend logo? It's not quite what they come up with later.
Reminds me of the Werewolf by Night kind of thing for some reason. Maybe that was loosely influencing it with the simplicity of the W's, but it reminds me of that. I get your ghost vibe from it as well, but that cover is bloody gorgeous, isn't it?
Beautiful. Wolverine's arms are on display. He's got claws out and like hands on his thighs. The Hulk is laying very fainted or dead in front of him, starring the Uncanny X-Men, which again was the biggest book at the time. So we got to throw that logo on there. And then my favorite part of this cover is this corner box where we get like Shadow Wolverine, like Batman style, with his claws out in the classic corner box. Colby, did you have thoughts on the art on this cover?
Oh, what I really like is the uses of pink. I was looking at that through the issue in their uses of color where it should not naturally be that color, how they use that to really accent the story and the emotion. Like you're saying, it is so striking because of the contrast of this, you know, yellow ground with this red and pink sky. The balance of it, you know, we have the mirror of Wolverine and the Hulk, mirrored reflection of the colored palettes. Yeah, I really like how balanced it is.
Yeah, yellow ground, green landscape, pink and red sky, right? Like melding in with right. The yellow standing out against it. Although, did you notice that Hulk's pants match the sunset? Because that's fantastic.
Of course.
As we jump into this book, we get the Watcher introduction. I love this book. I don't know if you guys watched the What If series on Disney Plus. It's a delight. Yes. Time. We don't get a lot of Wolverine content there, but there's a lot of X-Men stuff throughout What If, which is great. We get this guy's weird floating head with the giant, like, popped collar. I'm fascinated by the way different artists draw the Watcher. I am the Watcher. For untold millennia, it has been my task to observe the pivotal events which help to shape the reality of your world. Witness, if you will, one such moment. It began when the man monster called the Hulk wandered into Canada and battled the accursed cannibal creature of the North Woods, the Flesh Eater. Fearless of the rampaging creatures, the Canadian authorities dispatched a special agent, a mutant possessing amazing agility and an indestructible adamantium steel skeleton, to capture them. Adamantium and steel is redundant because it's only one, not the other. A steel skeleton would be a very different thing. That's more Colossus's exterior. But what if something had gone wrong? What if Wolverine had killed the Hulk? Now, modern continuity, we have a book called The Immortal Hulk. This guy dies and he just comes back anyway. You know, he dies a bunch of times, but in this world, he hasn't come back at this point. We get a gorgeous image, a recreation of Wolverine leaping at the Hulk, who is fighting the Flesh Eater. So when we flip open the book, we get a variation in this world. And Steve, do you want to tell us where this world world goes a little bit different than the world we are used to.
Wolverine himself is different. The brutal version of Wolverine is clearly here. He's got that rage instantly in him all the time, it seems, and it seems like he's on the edge ever more than the usual universe version of Wolverine. So the slightest thing, he doesn't want to draw with the Hulk for starters, as it leads us into. He doesn't want to be beaten. He wants to be the best there is in this universe more than any other. I like it.
The implication of violence is crazy here. So Wolverine has the berserker side, which is, again, is very Vietnam, right? There's a lot of movies about American soldiers in Vietnam going slowly crazy and then like losing their minds on like a group of innocent villagers with like machine guns kicking their heads in. Like, it's really uncomfortable. And Wolverine's berserker rage very much elicits that like cop or soldier rage that makes me uncomfortable with so many stories. But for this character, it's kind of magical. There's always that beast on the other side. But the implication of violence and the way they can't quite show it here. Wolverine, we get a close-up. He is looking very scary. He goes, "That hurt, huh? I figured your neck's your weak link, and I was right. So gotta keep hammering away, ripping into your throat." We get the caption telling us, "Teeth clenched in raging fury, Wolverine flails at the Hulk without mercy. The Jade Giant staggers, clutching futilely at his bleeding neck, then topples backwards, crashing with a force that jars the earth. He's dead. I did it. I beat the Hulk." Colby, what are your thoughts on Wolverine and extreme violence here? It's crazy.
Okay, well, I don't know what cycle he's on that, like, suddenly out of nowhere, he's, like, able to, like, even penetrate the Hulk's neck in the first place. So, little confused about that. And
I mean, it's adamantium, right?
That escalated very quickly. I don't think he needed to go there. I think they could have taken a breath and we didn't have to have this.
So, Wolverine's always had more patience with a rabid animal, right? So, he leaves the Flesh Eater alive. They find him unconscious, but the Hulk is dead. In the next page, and we move very quickly in these early what-ifs, we see, like, in one top panel, they're reporting it on the news, and we see Spider-Man, presumably watching it from someone, maybe it's J. Jonah Jameson's window, or maybe he's watching someone shower, I don't know. He's suspended upside down as, like, the grossest peeping Tom. We get a contingent of the Avengers, including Jarvis, Iron Man, Wasp, Captain America, Thor, Vision, and Scarlet Witch in one panel, Daredevil in another, and all four of the Fantastic Four, and they are all reacting to the news that Wolverine is dead. A huge part of the Hulk comics is the faction of the military called the Hulkbusters, who are always after Wolverine. He's constantly fighting the United States Army in the early books, especially. Thunderbolt Ross is their leader. Betty Banner is his love, although she's married to Glenn Talbot during this time. And when Betty gets the news at the Hulkbuster base, she's so sad. Her dad comforts her. "What could ever ease the pain in my heart? I know the Hulk was dangerous, but inside that monster was a man, the man I loved." Which is very much Wolverine again, right? We've got the monster within the man always there. Thunderbolt hugs his daughter. "When I think that I might have caused my darling daughter this sorrow, I shudder. Rest in peace, Banner. You deserve it." In our reality, both of these two become Hulks, like red versions of the Hulk, which is crazy to me. And then we jump to some characters that we are very happy to see. Steve, do you want to tell us about the supervillains waiting for us on the next page?
Yeah, this page is very funky, isn't it? And very of its time. I mean, look at the blob there for starters. look at those pants. If they're pants, that's yeah, crazy.
Blob and Iceman shop at the same costume shop.
Mastermind, of course, in his full-on ugly usual state. No Jason Wingard beauty there. I'd completely forgotten until rereading this, Lorelei, if that's how you say her name.
Yeah, Lorelei, yeah.
Yeah, see, I had completely forgotten she existed. There's many, many very similar characters, obviously, ever since this. Yeah, it's a funky version of Magneto's Brotherhood, I would say, this particular team-up. But the page is stunning. Magneto comes across as the very much massively over the top, almost Skeletor-like way he's speaking to me through the whole issue. I love
it. Yeah, he's floating in this weird little airship with Lorelei hanging out. He created this woman. He says in an Avengers issue around this time, like, "Oh, I have a Pygmalion complex. Like, I'm developing a certain fondness for this woman I created." Colby, is it a snicked or a kicked on Lorelei's dress?
Kicked. No offense to anybody religious, but this is Amish, Mennonite, full covered. There is no skin showing.
It's giving very like the ninth wife of the old Mormon guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The tenth sister wife that had to use the curtains.
Eunice the Untouchable is just letting some like missiles bounce off of him for fun. They hear about the Hulk dying and Magneto goes, "This can only be the handwork of Homo Superior." Blob, who, can he tell me what he means here? "Too bad old J-Jaws bought the farm. I was hoping to go the distance with him someday." Huh? Blob's got a
punch. Right?
Mastermind then creates an illusion of the Hulk and says, "Turn my overweight great compatriot, and you'll get your wish. Fuck you, Mastermind.
I have the same problem with Danny Moonstar's power. Like, if you've met them once, you know that their power can't hurt you. So it is insane to me that they keep tricking people. Like, we just saw that the Hulk is dead, and Blob turns around. Whoa, it's the Hulk. It's like, really? Come on. You're not that big.
So Mastermind calls Hulk his overweight compatriot. Hulk's like, wait, it's an illusion. And then Mastermind yells, very observant, you obese Claude. Again, fuck this guy. Magneto's then like, oh my God, stop fighting. Lorelei, silence them. And we get the caption, the lips of the beauteous mutant part, and a soul-numbing song issues forth, a song that freezes both men in their tracks. We cannot move. Lorelei's voice can paralyze men. I love Lorelei. Demanda Martini and I have a whole episode about this lady where Demanda's in Lorelei drag. It's delightful. And then Magneto tells us the Brotherhood has a plan. Stay tuned. We then jump to a military complex in Quebec that serves as Wolverine's home base. He is presently AWOL at the local tavern across the sprawling headquarters. It's this kind of gorgeous quad. There's the Northern Light Bar across the way, just across the street from the military complex like you do. And Kenny, do you want to tell us about this scene of Wolverine in the bar? Again, he loves a stale beer.
So my husband is, he's a Franco-Ontarian, so he is a French-Canadian from Ontario and not Quebec. And they get very angry when you conflate the two. It's always so funny to me whenever they show like a Quebecois like setting or character in these comic books, because it's kind of just like they're country bumpkins instead of like this like snooty francophones. So it always just gives me a chuckle.
So Wolverine's kicking back in a chair, blue boots up on the table, three girls flirting with him, and a guy named Jean-Paul's like, hey, I'm gonna beat you up. And a bunch of guys are like, get him, he can't steal our girls. Colby, is it a snicker kicked on Wolverine's bar outfit? White cowboy hat, fringe jacket.
Are we not gonna talk about the fringe?
Oh, yeah,
the fringe
jacket,
is the focus here. The man is wearing across the nipple line, probably suede, tassely fringe, red pants, blue boots. Love the boots. Kind of love the boots. Not gonna lie.
I even have that in my notes.
it's pretty fabulous. That's so it's a snicked, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah. Take his shirt off and then hell yeah.
Just keep the fringe, just a little fringe.
Just the fringe.
Wolverine starts kicking ass. When one guy draws a gun, Wolverine then just like slashes at him. And you get the idea, this man is dead. Like, he cut right into his side. Steve, did you get that implication?
Yeah,
100%. You were in McKenzie, they say.
Yeah, 100%. There's no way that guy's getting back up again, is there?
So Wolverine's panicked. He runs back across the street, looks for James McDonald Hudson. Steve, do you want to give us the 1-2 on who this guy is?
What do you call him? Vindicator. Guardian as well at some point, I seem to recall. But yep, I've always
back and forth.
Stuck him in my head as Vindicator because I just think it sounds better. Yeah, they discovered our man Wolverine, young Logan, when he first left the Weapon X project, when he first broke out of it, was living in the wilderness. Heather Hudson and James Hudson found him, took him to their home, gave him a sense of reality again, and sort of brought him back to humanity to a degree, and eventually obviously then led him into the Department of Alpha Flight, part of the Weapon H program, etc. So this point in this universe, even by the looks of it, with Jimmy Hudson here being one of his best mates.
I really enjoy reading this as Wolverine's first throuple. They find a naked man in the woods. James Hudson is on his like honeymoon with his like wife who's 20 years younger than him, who is also a secretary. And then they like live together for a while. There's also a story farther in the future where he's dead, but his 19-year-old clone starts dating Heather, who's now like older and the leader of the team. It's funny. The age gaps in this story crack me up. So Wolverine like throws open the door and he's like, I killed a civilian. And James is like, dude, I don't know what you want me to do. You've killed soldiers and I've covered up for you. But like, now you like killed a guy. Like, you're going to have to go through the court system. Wolverine runs out. I sweat blood for the military doing their dirty jobs. And when I come begging for help, you throw me to the wolves. No way, Hudson. Hear me? No way. And then he runs out. He's thinking, and who hasn't felt this way sometimes? Last years of psychotherapy and drug therapy for what? I'm still a killer at heart. Always was, always will be.
Okay, so he's been around long enough. History is written by the winner. Basically, if they're saying it's okay for you to go out and go on these missions and kill people for us, well, who are you to say, like, who I can and can't kill otherwise? Also, I don't know why Wolverine's running. Like, they're gonna throw him in prison and what? Like, like they's gonna hold him? I don't know why he's running. Who's he scared of?
Well, he doesn't think it's fair that he's not allowed to kill someone. civilians, damn it. Like, all he's done for this country. Why can't I just kill a guy in a bar once in a while?
Yeah. Yeah. If he can kill people in the name of the country, then the country can't say, you killed somebody.
So Wolverine runs outside. It is a quarter moon, beautiful night, and a purple ship picks him up in a tractor beam and brings him aboard. Who are you? What do you want? I am power. Men call me Magneto. You are homo superior. A homo like us. Oh, sorry. A mutant like us. We have come to invite you to join our brotherhood. It's all men and one fag hag in a, you know, ninth wife dress. It's fine. And Wolverine's like, yeah, sure. I got no choice. The law's already breathing down my neck. So Magneto has recruited Wolverine to the brotherhood. We then flash to Professor X in his mansion at his little Cerebro. I've had a telepathic glimmer of an unknown mutant in the air. I must locate him. We then cut over to the X-Men in a danger room session in their late 60s costumes. Colby has thoughts here.
Wait. You glossed over the nude illusion fishnet pants with a purple jacket.
Oh, yeah. It does look like Xavier has fishnet pants. It's the shadow, I think, but not.
It's nude illusion fishnet. I refuse to believe otherwise.
I love it. Do you want to share your thoughts, Colby, on the X-Men danger room sequence?
I've been to a few circuit parties like that, actually. No, honestly, it looks like they're having a great time.
Jean Grey's batting some balls out of the air. Angel's pointing some missiles. We don't have Beast here, if you recall. Beast is off working for the Brand Corporation or, you know, getting ready to join the Avengers, depending on where you look. But we get the other four X-Men here. Xavier needs to alert the students because the new mutant is showing up near the mansion. Wolverine walks through the front door, carrying a bag over his shoulder, wearing a red, like, frill neck turtleneck under a fur jacket. I came to sign on with your team. And Xavier's like, dude, we keep our lives a secret. And Wolverine says, yeah, but mutants have a distinctive scent. It was a piece of cake tracking you down. But really, he thinks, the Canadian government clamped a security lid on my tussle with the law, and Baldi can't read my mind thanks to a telepathic scrambler Magneto gave me. Xavier says, you know, I'm convinced you are a true mutant. Welcome to the X-Men. Cyclops is immediately suspicious, which is hilarious because he doesn't want competition for Jean, and he sees how Jean is looking already.
Like, the whole reason he's down here to start with is because he was afraid the Canadian government wouldn't put a lid on it for his, with his law tussle, and he just says that they did. So, like, what's his drama? Like,
but now he's a terrorist in the mutant cause. It's fine. Lorelei in that purple dress convinced him. That's all he needed. Also, he has the rep of killing the Hulk in this world, right? We can't forget. In the days and weeks that follow, Wolverine becomes an integral part of the team, battling such menaces as the mutant slaying Sentinels. And we see them in battle with the Sentinels. Wolverine's almost kind of in a team leader, or like just kind of MVP of the team role. He's thinking to himself during this fight, like, Magneto told me to gain the trust of the team. I've got to trash these robots. I knew this tin-plated bozo couldn't stand up to my unbreakable adamantium claws.
Brilliant. It looks great, doesn't it? It's proper retro nowadays, of course. The way they're all dressed, the way they all look. Even though X-Men 97, of course, showed us a glimmer of some of those outfits recently. But I love it. I think Wolverine is as ever. He's there right at the front of the fight. He doesn't care who he's fighting, how big they are. He's there helping them out. But on this occasion, it bites him on the arse a bit, doesn't it? And ultimately, they have to save him. But I quite like that as well. And ultimately, that little sign of weakness to them probably let them accept him into the team even more, because he was willing to fight and ultimately die for them. Then they suddenly welcome him in after they've saved him, that little all in that one page.
Cyclops is asked to the camera, and how would you describe what Jean Grey is doing during this fight? Her dress is a rough, man. A little oversized. I don't know what's going on here.
It's good. It looks great. I like it. I like Wolverine's mask. You know, I love this, the whiskered mask. It's so, I don't know, hated, I suppose, over the years to a degree. I like it. I like the vibe from it. It's different. And they do hint upon it in here, how violent it makes him look.
I've got an Ali Garza commission of this costume coming for my art wall soon. I'm really excited to post that when it arrives. That's the fight is over. You know, they're all buddies. Iceman's like, oh my gosh, we're best friends now. And Wolverine's one of the family. And Wolverine's like, how can I betray the X-Men now? But that night, he sneaks into the room that houses Cerebro, and he sticks his claws into it. Xavier has Cerebro rigged with a proximity fuse shoes, set to howl if Magneto and his bunch ever came within range. But my adamantium claws put an end to that. He can't break one commitment, even though he kind of wants to. But as he's sneaking out, it's like the Grinch leaving with the Christmas tree. Cindy Lou Who's waiting around the corner. Here's Jean Grey. And he's like, oh, I recognize her scent. Oh, you startled me. Sorry, Jeannie. I couldn't sleep. So I went downstairs to grab me a brew. Sorry about earlier. I still haven't thanked you for saving your life. Forget it. It comes with the uniform. By the way, I wish you'd do something about that mask of yours. It makes you look so fierce, so brutal. And you're among friends here. Well, good night. Good night. She's clearly inviting him upstairs. Like, take your mask off and follow, buddy.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm with friends, all right. And that's just the trouble. Lorelai or Jean Grey?
Jean Grey for me.
I mean, clearly, Lorelai's objectively a really vapid, weird character.
Yeah. Does she ever speak apart from like when she sings and makes guys go?
No, not really. There's like one line of dialogue in a couple of comic books, but really she just goes, ooh, as the like narrator tells you how hot she is. That's her whole thing. Go listen to Amanda's episode on it. I guarantee you'll laugh your ass off multiple times. So Wolverine immediately returns to his room where he promptly takes off all his clothes, drinks a beer, and pulls a blanket up over his waist while he's waiting to get hard, thinking, Jeannie's a classy lady. I can sense a wild, uncontrollable side to her, which she keeps under wraps. Sometimes I think she could be the woman I spent my whole life looking for. And he is clearly going to jerk off, but Magneto shows up in his room. You are seeing an astral projection, which I am transmitting along the Earth's magnetic field. Have you carried out my instructions? Yeah, Cerebro's been disconnected, but there's been a slight change of plans. Jean Grey goes free, or the deal's off, and Magneto is pissed. How dare you? I could crush you with the merest thought. Says, I have no desire to injure any fellow mutant. I only wish to capture the X-Men and convince them to join me in my war against humanity. Ha ha ha! Once the X-Men fall, the rest of mankind will be helpless before me. The day of homos is at hand. Oh, sorry, homo superior is at hand.
It's so funny to me how, like, everything's magnets. Everything is magnets. Like, he can do anything because magnets. It is always so funny, the shit they come up with.
Yeah, he's massively overpowered by the most daftest of things. And then again, the Skeletor moment in that very last panel. He's just that bizarre laughing and excitement at himself over nothing. Maybe it's the excitement over seeing Wolverine in bed. I don't know, but it's a great page, I must admit. A lot happens in just those six little squares.
The day of homos is at hand. We then jump back to the danger room. Wolverine is hacking things, thinking these workouts are a waste of my time. He's clearly staring at Jean Grey across the room. Cyclops, who's feeling a little bit insecure about this, decides to impress Jean in a very particular way. Colby, what does he do?
Are we going to talk about this look in Jean's face?
Yes, we are. But tell me what Cyclops does first.
He decides to etch Jean's name into a piece of steel, which I'm sure that was top of her Christmas wish list this year.
What? What? Huh? What is her facial reaction to seeing her name carved?
Deranged.
Like she just did a rail of meth.
Yes.
She looks unhinged. The eyes are bigger than the face. Like, ooh, she is fiending for some etched steel.
Wolverine jumps in between them. I hope I'm not intruding. Wolverine, that was rude. I was mething out to some steel. And he says, look what I did. I redesigned my mask just to impress you. And maybe later we could. But all of a sudden, the wall bursts in from outside. They are under attack. And in come the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Like, they're all the way in the mansion in the danger room. Nobody sensed them coming because Cerebro got fritzed. And Xavier must have a headache. I don't know exactly what's going on. How fitting that the hapless X-Men should greet me on their knees, which in the porn version of this scene goes very differently after that statement. Magneto. Soon the entire world shall follow suit. Okay, Magneto, how much attention do you need? They are there to take over, and Magneto immediately says, sing, Lorelai, sing. And she says, ah. I'm just kidding. Little Mermaid action. And the blonde trust siren uses her hypnotic voice to immobilize the male X-Men, all save Wolverine, who's equipped with a special set of earplugs. Steve, do you want to tell us about Jean Grey here?
Yeah, she's excited, isn't she? Look at that face again. She's the one that thinks, oh my goodness, I can save all of them here. Yeah, great, crazy faces, crazy moments, and goodness knows, can she not like use her powers to move a bit quicker or anything, rather just bolting across the room there? I don't know.
This is largely unintentional, but in this panel of her thoughts, she's realizing, like, I have ovaries, so Lorelai can't affect me. But there's one thought bubble coming from her brain and another coming directly from her vagina. There's a, it's like straight between her legs, under her skirt, with the trail of bubbles going, like, up her skirt to her cooch. Is there any other way to describe this?
Oh my God, now that you said that, reading it as her vagina talking is so much better.
Her vagina thinks, should I tackle her or deal with the greater threat, Magneto himself? Delightful. Xavier instructs her to activate the danger room defenses. She's telekinetic, but she just goes running for it. And yes, like, Magneto, she's moving. Magneto rips a piece of the floor out, throws it at Jean. Wolverine's like, dude, you said you wouldn't hurt her. And she goes, Wolverine, you're the traitor. How could you turn against us? And I've been asking myself that same question. And he decides to sacrifice himself. It's like the classic jump in front of the bullet thing, except it's a full metal panel. He deliberately threw himself into the path of the missile. This is a weird sacrifice moment. Steve, thoughts?
Yeah, cracking word there. One, when the metal hit him. Yeah, great. Good on him. What a hero. What a legend. The face looks a bit Beavis and Butthead, though, in one of those panels as well, which I'm not keen on in that sense, but good on him. You know, and, he realizes he's the hero after all, and these really are his friends. I like it.
This just keeps on giving. It's delicious. So Jean activates the danger room defenses, which somehow breaks Lorelai's control over the X-Men, who are now assuming battle formation. We got to talk about Angel, first of all. Colby...
Are we talking about scissors?
Yep. Where'd this giant pair of scissors come from?
You know, visually, it's beautiful. In the context of this issue, you know, they're in the danger room, and the fact that a pair of scissors is now more dangerous than anything that has been thrown at them. They couldn't have come up with something more than scissors.
They're big scissors, in fairness.
A blade, a saw, something. Scissors. Angel. And not even like haircut, nice, just basic classroom scissors.
Angel is not interested in scissoring. And then we have Mastermind, a monster. Like, this is his only fucking move. Jean's like, oh, there's a monster. It must be Mastermind. Kenny, do you want to describe this monster for us?
But it kind of doesn't look like, it's not unlike Sasquatch. It's a big, hairy, generic, unimaginative man would create a monster.
He's like lumpy orange.
I don't think Mastermind tries very hard ever.
No, he truly doesn't.
But how is this different than anything the Danger Room puts out itself?
Exactly. And I'll put this to you guys. What's more scary, that furry monster or a big pair of scissors?
The Danger Room creates constructs of hard light that can actually hurt you. Mastermind's illusions just make you think you're being hurt, like your brain reacts to it.
But does it at this point, or is it still just like nets and rockets and like little laser beams?
Oh, that's true. It depends on which version you're... That's true. Yeah. So there's
just a pair of floating scissors in the room, and Angel's first instinct is like, oh, run away, giant scissors. Like, bitch, please, come on, get a grip.
Angel flies through the monster, socks Mastermind, who, as he's falling, goes, no, you should be cowering in abject terror. We then get Wolverine versus Blob.
I've got to read this because I found this shocking. The very molecules of my flesh obey my every mental command. I can increase my mass until no force on earth can move me. I thought he was just a big chunk. I didn't realize there's any mental part of his power whatsoever.
Depends on the writer, but yeah, he, as long as his feet are touching the ground, you can't knock him over. He controls his own sense of gravity, and he can move the molecules of his mass in particular ways, again, depending on the writer that is writing him. So there's this thing where, like, Wolverine punches him, and then your hand is trapped in the mass because he can't.
I guess I thought it was passive rather than him, like, actively rearranging his molecules, apparently.
Yeah,
for a dumbass, that's pretty impressive.
You gotta, like, dislodge him. Blob punches him. Oh, man, he hits as hard as the Hulk. Wolverine thinks, I'm betting Jelly Belly can't do what Density bit when he ain't rooted to the floor. Again, the fat jokes are just ridiculous. They just go on and on. He somehow convinces Blob to, like, jump in the air. Wolverine grabs his legs and just inserts his head into Blob's, like, it's a really bizarre image, you guys. It's so weird. I don't want to take this conversation too far, but this is a weird, weird image.
Final panel is very, like, it's so Barra, like the, like, Japanese porn style. It is 100% Barra, that last panel.
with Blob whamming into the wall, it's bizarre. We then have Iceman versus Eunice the Untouchable. With Iceman loves to make a big hard ice spear. Doesn't ever go well. Bounces off. I love the character Eunice. I love all of these old Brotherhood guys, except for Mastermind. Fuck that guy. Cyclops melts the floor underneath Eunice to make him fall in. And then Iceman just like puts a little dome over it. And then we have Magneto and Lorelei. Steve, Jean versus Lorelei is my favorite part, maybe. So Magneto has activated the room's hidden circuitry.
Oh, yeah, I neutralize.
You were irritating Sonic Alarm with a mere gesture. Now Lorelei can again vocalize you into submission. Lorelei? But Jean Grey's ready. Steve, tell us what happens.
Yeah, well, Jean there is clearly just already picked up Lorelei and tied her up in her own hair. Very bonded, very, very nicely done and very simply done. And why didn't she just do that before instead of arsing around with your fences?
She can't answer, Magneto. She's a little tied up in the moment. Oh, Jean.
Very 1980s army joke there as well from her. Very nicely done.
And then everyone jumps on Magneto. Xavier's like, no. And then Magneto repels them all with pure magnetic energy. And then we have the moment where Wolverine makes his decision. Magneto is going to kill all the X-Men before they wake up. But what does Wolverine do, Colby?
He fucks Magneto up. He kicks him in the back of the head.
And he calls him Mags. Don't believe it, Mags.
I mean, this is like pretty like, that's a pretty cunt move. If, you know, there's not really a better word for it. Like, you know, he's got this helmet. Nobody else could touch it. It's like, never saw it coming. Especially Magneto with all of his magnetic powers. He's just saying he can literally do anything right now. So to be able to catch him by surprise and kill the Hulk, Wolverine's having a great year.
Yeah.
That helmet has zero peripheral vision though. Like he is super straight on, and that is all he can see.
Yeah. You would think he would feel the metal in Wolverine coming at him though. No?
Yeah, that's true.
He should have for sure.
Wolverine hacks Magneto open. Again, it doesn't quite show it, but the implication is like you're murdering him. Wolverine turns away. Magneto then, I'm gonna make him pay. He makes Wolverine pop his claws. Now this is Magneto's doing. He ain't throwing in the towel yet. He's forcing me to impale myself. Gotta fight it. It's no use. Can't hold back any longer. Yeah. He stabs himself in the throat, slightly off panel. Steve, do you have thoughts? Apparently, Wolverine and Magneto are both dead.
Correct. Yeah. Shocked. How? I don't get it. I don't get why Wolverine just doesn't heal from that, realistically. I don't
magnets.
Understand.
It must be
again. Yeah, you're right, Ken. Wolverine, love it. I love the takedown of Magneto. Great. It looks great. Love that little image there where he clearly does go for him and gets him with the claws. But I don't know. I don't get how Magneto suddenly dropped the floor, of course, after that. And Wolverine's seemingly dead as well. Just enough, though. He's got a little bit left in him just to mutter those lame words out, Jean Grey. But nah.
It always cracks me up when comics of this era need to give us like an arrow to show us reading order. So Wolverine's stabbing himself. The little arrow points down and then we see him falling off screen. Magneto's dead. Jean's like, oh no, Wolverine's dying. Professor X confirms, I'm afraid Wolverine is beyond help, which, you know, healing factor. Dying, looks up at Jean. He's laying in Cyclops' arms, head in Cyclops' lap as he looks at Jean and says, Jeannie, if only things could have worked out differently. If only, Iceman gives us, he's gone. And Professor X, Wolverine came among us an enemy and died an X-Man. He can have no greater epitaph than that. Final caption gives us, thus on this world, three powerful protagonists have perished in battle to nevermore play a role in the unfolding pageant of history. Hulk, Magneto, Wolverine, all gone. The end. What are your concluding thoughts on this crazy story?
Never mind what if. More like what the fuck. It's just a crazy, crazy book. It's funny. It's brilliant. Just the ending is the most quickly rushed through bit you'll ever read in any comic book. But yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's a sign of the times. But I like it. Again, I like the fact that they went there. They tried something different, as bizarre as it ended up being.
Yeah, so I just wish that it had like a companion. This is what if, then we also had a how to explain all the crazy shit that doesn't really follow through. Like at least Wolverine, like maybe if he had been, like impaled himself like through the skull and everything and the adamantium can't get out. Like, but no, they draw it to where it's, yeah, so I have more questions than answers.
Yeah, you're right.
And Ken?
So when it says three powerful protagonists, I was like, who's the third? I had completely forgotten that the Hulk was a part of this.
A lot happens in these what ifs sometimes. The next story, if you read the physical copy of this issue, the next story is a Fantastic Four. What if there was no Fantastic Four? It's a Roger Stern, Alan Kupperberg story. It's the art is wild. wild. There's so many crazy images of characters, especially the Thing, and they draw the Watcher so hot, which is a weird contrast to this like weird alien frumpy old man guy that we often get. I had a delightful time with each of you today. I'd love to hear any concluding thoughts you have. And then as we're wrapping up, we're going to put this out on November 11th. Where can people find you online? And is there anything you'd like to plug?
Final thoughts. This was amazing once again. Thank you so much for having me. You can find me on most social media at Colby Melvin. Also, the X-Men 101 podcast. We'll leave it for there.
Nice. Loved it. Thank you for having me on, guys. Really enjoyed the chat with you all. Enjoyed the subject as retro as it is. I'll happily do anything like that again with you all.
Happily have you back, my friend.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that then. I'm at WolverSteve on most social media as well. Mostly Instagram, mostly Twitter, or X, of course, that we have to call it nowadays. Love it. I'm going to follow all you guys back if I don't already. Send me your links in a DM or something afterwards.
Absolutely. And Ken?
There's something, I have such a soft spot for like the kitty cat whisker mask for like original Wolverine. And the idea that Gene finds that more intimidating than his normal mask is just had me cracking up. I've never been a big fan of the Marvel What If stories until you got me hooked on the one Juggernaut episode that we did. And ever since, I love them. I just eat them up. You can find me on Instagram at KinChrist. I have my various adult content linked there. It's going to be well past Atlanta Pride because Atlanta Pride's this weekend. So I was going to say come find me. But yeah, thank you so much for having me again. I know I was a late addition and I am just so, so, so happy that you called.
I'm so happy you joined us. Thank you. Yeah, we had a last minute cancellation, but I'm delighted you're here. Thanks, Kenny. Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos. The three of you are welcome to add me. Just ask. You can follow Gray Malkin Lane, Gray Malkin _ Lane on Instagram. In November, we're doing more Wolverine content. So in the next episode, please watch for What If Wolverine Were an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a Nick Fury story that also stems off of Wolverine's first appearance. My guests on that episode are J.P. Karliak, the voice of Morph, and two of the hardest workers on X-Men 97, returning guests Sean Ganka and Amit Yanamura. And over on the Patreon, you can watch for a character profile on the bizarre, crazy character, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, with my friend Robin Moffat, who goes by Negasonic Tranny Warhead online. Right. Crazy plans for the rest of this year. I'm so excited. Making this show is like one of my greatest joys. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Colby. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kenny. We will see you all back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane. Thank you for listening to Gray Malkin Lane. We hope you are enjoying this podcast. Gray Malkin Lane is produced and recorded in Salt Lake City, Utah, with music and editing done by my husband, Michael Bell, and promo art done by the incredible Seth Martell. Look for us on Patreon, where we are releasing weekly episodes about obscure characters and facts. It's a great way to participate with the podcast for only just a couple of dollars a month, and it helps support what we are doing here. Also, the best way you could help Gray Malkin Lane is by sharing and liking and subscribing, but also please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We'll see you back here next time on Gray Malkin Lane.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.